Good afternoon. This is not Torn Into. This is Community Focus. Our old name was Torn Into. If you normally tune into this program on Fridays at 2 p.m., there are usually two people here. My brother, my partner in this broadcast, Gregory T., is still recovering. Would you all do me a favor and send your prayers and best wishes out to Greg as he recovers? I can do this show alone, but we are always better when we do it together. Miss your brother, get well. Our program today, before we jump in, I want to do a couple other things. Weather. If you have not been outside today, take a break. Go walk, go stretch, but go outside. Sunshine and warm weather. Our high today is 72 degrees. It is beautiful out. Tomorrow, expect to be breezy, low 43, high of 63. The temperature will drop a little bit on Sunday. Low 31, high of 43. Monday, low of 27, high of 47. Tuesday, low of 38, high of 54. Wednesday, low of 43, high of 59. And Thursday, I don't believe what I'm seeing here. I see a snowflake. Y'all are not praying. Low of 30, high of 49. So that's your weather for the week. So enjoy today. Enjoy this weekend as best you can. We have been doing for a few weeks now our top five news stories. It's hard for the top news story not to be what's going on in Washington, D.C. Let's make it two-parters. One, the layoffs and cuts continue, as well as the returns to work. So that's probably our story number one. Story number two, we may not face a government shutdown. Looks like we may have a continuing resolution deal to keep the government in operation until this fall. Number three, again, if you're a sports person, have you been paying attention to football free agency? This is the second season where we see if our teams are winning or losing. We get free agency, moving players around. How did your team do? And then after this comes the draft. All right. Third story, a little closer to home. In news out of Lansing, not a complete surprise, Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist has announced that he will be running for governor. Again, not a total surprise, but he has made that announcement. We know our current governor is term limited, so she won't be seeking re-election. And on my personal fifth local story, major construction has begun on Sanford Street in City of Muskegon Heights from Broadway south to Oakwood, major road reconstruction and water main project. So those are our top five news stories for the week. Hopefully you'll get a little more information on those if then you'll pique your interest. Today's show, I'm excited to welcome our guests to the show. We love to inform you about things going on in our community, and today is a tremendous opportunity for us to do that. No stranger to the show, would you join me in welcoming a frequent face around here at 103.7 The Beat, our county prosecutor, DJ Hilson. DJ, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Melvin?
Good. Also joining us today is Dr. Brian Stork.
Hey, Melvin, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. DJ, I like that tie you got there today. It looks great.
Yeah, it's not Michigan blue, buddy. It's Marquette blue.
Battle of the M's, huh? Okay. And I believe we have one more person joining us today. Okay.
Good afternoon. I'm Holly Alway, the Injury Prevention Coordinator at Trinity Health.
Holly, thank you for joining us at the program today. So we're going to, and when it's three people, I always make the mistake of asking a question and not directing it to anyone. So I'll try and do a better job of that. Or DJ, you can just jump in and take over if I go down. We have a grant announcement. A grant has been awarded for the prevention of youth and gun violence. I want to talk about that. Let me first start with you, DJ, then Dr. Stork, and then to you, Holly. Would you, just for our audience listening, just kind of briefly introduce yourselves and tell folks a little bit about you?
Happy to. As always, it's an honor to be a part of the 103.7 The Beat family.
My name is DJ Hilson. I've had the honor, the privilege, and pleasure of serving as your elected prosecutor since 2013. I'm looking forward to and have started my fourth term of office. And I'm looking forward to, you know, programs like what we're going to talk about today, as well as continue to work with the community to really enhance what I would term to be the quality of life. I truly believe that the quality of life is really improving every year. And what we're going to talk about today is a step to continue to enhance that. But, you know, I just enjoy the opportunity to talk to the community and certainly whether it's, you know, video or on radio with Big Rob and PA on a regular basis. This is just a wonderful format to inform folks. So, Melvin, I really appreciate the opportunity.
Glad to have you. Dr. Stork?
Thanks, Melvin. Well, you know, DJ's a tough act to follow, right? Quite that articulate. But I'm a local urologist. I've been in Muskegon 23 years. I love being here. I love our community. And really excited to talk about this program that I think benefits everybody in our community. And just blessed to be able to work with people like DJ and Holly for the benefit of everyone.
Okay.
And I'll turn it over to Holly.
Okay.
Thank you. Well, this is certainly the dream team. And I'm just as honored to be a part of this with DJ and Dr. Stork. So I've been the injury prevention coordinator at Trinity Health for over 20 years now. I'm a proud resident of the city of Muskegon and just really excited when we can bring programs like this into the community that, as DJ said, really improve the quality of life for the residents here.
Okay. So I have a press release here, but we'll get into this. From my understanding, we've received a $318,000 grant from the Bern State Crisis Intervention Program. And that's not the big part. The big part is we have prosecutor's office working with the hospital to deal with a big community issue, which is gun violence. DJ, why don't you start off? Tell us why apply for this grant and what's the issue we're trying to address with it?
Well, listen, I have to give all the credit to Dr. Stork here. I got an opportunity to meet him a couple of years ago on this very issue. And I hadn't known or met him before. And now I consider him a very close and dear friend. He was part of a small group of physicians, one being a resident at the time, who presented a research project this resident had done related to gun violence in Muskegon County. Looking at the folks that were coming into the emergency room, where they were coming from, their age, race, gender, all those things, and made a very compelling case as to why the hospital really needed to be more proactive in this area of prevention. You know, like myself in law enforcement, most of our job seems to most of the time be reactive. We're reacting to, you know, a situation in the hospital. The ER physicians and nurses and staff are reacting when people walk through the doors. And to have this opportunity to be proactive involving the only and largest health system here in Muskegon County was really something special. And to say that Dr. Stork has a passion for this is really underselling it. And quite frankly, I've never received more emails from a doctor, not even my own my own physician do I get as many emails as I do from Dr. Stork. But it's all centered around this idea of really wanting to be, again, like I said, proactive in this area. I mean, gun violence, as I know you know, Melvin, you've been around for a while. Mm-hmm. Gun violence has always been sort of that nagging issue that we deal with on a yearly basis. And everybody, and there are a lot of great groups out there, and there are a lot of folks really wanting to be a part of the solution as opposed to part of the problem. And this, as I have experienced, I think probably in the last 3 to 4 years, we're seeing our offenders and unfortunately our victims younger and younger in age. Yeah. And that's concerning, that's troubling, and it's tragic. Mm-hmm. And so this particular program that Dr. Stork really opened the doors to and provided the channel for was a sort of a blessing in disguise. And, you know, from my part, from the prosecutor's part, we were asked, because the grant required that the recipients worked with a local unit of government. And so they asked, hey, would you be that local unit of government that we can rely on? I said, absolutely, 100%. Anything that I can do and put my name on to essentially work towards ending, you know, tragic loss of life, especially in our younger generation, I'm all about. And so we have become sort of the fiduciary, if you will, of the monies that were received. And ultimately, part of the planning process as to how we were going to implement the Safer Team program. And so it's an easy yes for me. Anytime that we can be, as an office, be more actively involved in the community, in particular when we're dealing with as serious an issue as we are with gun violence.
Okay. Dr. Stork, let me ask you a question. Where does this passion come from to not just be the doctor, but to do something proactive like this?
Yeah. Thanks, Melvin. And thank you, DJ, for all the kind words. I grew up in a small farming community in Iowa. And one night when I was a teenager, one of my friends was the victim of a murder-suicide. His mother, who had had some health problems, chose to murder her family and then commit suicide. And one of my friends was one of the victims. And then later in Iowa, one of the local football coaches was killed by a former student with a handgun. So I've always had this topic on my radar, even though I practice urology, you know, which is totally different than what we're talking about today. Mm-hmm. And when I moved to Muskegon, I was over to Hackley a lot. I really enjoyed practicing at Hackley. And I would see, you know, in Iowa, I would see persons of a white color being shot. And when I moved to Muskegon, I'd see young black men being shot. And, you know, in my mind, it doesn't make any difference, you know, the bullet doesn't care. And so I just really felt like we needed to do something about this. And I felt like we could do something about it. Mostly because I knew a lot of people like Holly, who will talk next, and lots of other people in the community, and I knew this community could do it. So.
Okay. Holly, well, we've got Gregory Roberts, who shouldn't be talking, but is watching the program, says thank you for your service.
It's thank always you. Good to hear from Greg. Hope you're getting better, buddy. Yeah.
Holly, let me ask you a question. I see injury intervention. You know, maybe some people's first thought when you think of gun violence is, you know, most people mishandling guns are shooting each other. But I mean, it is an injury, but that's probably not the first thought that comes to mind when people start thinking about current gun violence. You know, that this is an injury that we can prevent. Help us with that a little bit.
Sure. So I, you know, as DJ mentioned, a lot of our systems are meant to be reactive, and mm-hmm. I'm lucky in my job to have a proactive position. My job mm-hmm. is to keep people out of the hospital rather than treat them once they get there. And so my mm-hmm. approach is a little bit different, but I think we really need to think about gun violence as a disease. That's absolutely what it is. And we can prevent diseases. We just need to look at what the data is telling us and what the evidence-based interventions are. And in this grant that we received uses one of those evidence-based interventions to really get into the community and talk with kids before they become a victim or a perpetrator of gun violence.
Okay. So, DJ, I know you're not just a feel-good prosecutor. You prosecute people. But for people, and we want to educate people, for people think, well, it's just another feel-good program. We have some real data out there for programs that like to talk about things that can reduce gun violence. Is that true?
You asking me that, Melvin?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, certainly this is not this the Safer Teens program is not a fly by night intervention strategy. In fact, it's very evidence based, and it was developed on the east side of the state in, again, some of our more urban areas that experience similar, if not greater, volumes of gun violence than we do, the Flint-Saginaw area. And you know, that was part of the real, I'll say, treasure for us having Dr. Stork, because his connection not only to the University of Michigan, but more importantly, their firearm specialty area attached to the University of Michigan was really the catalyst that started this process going. You know, there's some great research partners that we get to work with on that side of the state and through the University of Michigan that really embraced what we were trying to accomplish. And I tell you, in those first meetings that we had several years ago with those folks, they were just as excited as we were about the possibility of really making a difference here in Muskegon. And so, you know, certainly I think both Dr. Stork and Holly probably have more of the nuts and bolts on the numbers, because I, as my wife knows, I am not a numbers guy. I'm just not. I don't get to hold the checkbook. I don't even get to know what's in the bank account. So, but ultimately, you know, we wanted to make sure that what we were looking to do here in Muskegon wasn't, you know, something that we saw in the back of a magazine, that it was actually something that had been tested and that is, and that had been essentially evidence-based, that was showing positive results. And we were fortunate to kind of be at the right place at the right time to really start to learn more about this particular program.
Okay. So Holly, can you tell me what specifically is the Safer Teens program and what will this grant allow you to be able to do?
So Safer Teens is a youth-based program, and it's almost so simple. It's amazing. So we first do screenings. We have three questions that measure exposure to violence in the youth's life. And then based on the scoring to those three questions, we do an intervention. And that intervention really is about goal setting. What's going on? What do you want to do with your life? And what are the resources that you need to get to that point? Because what we're finding is these kids that are victims of violence or perpetrators of violence are just not as well supported in the community or in their lives as they should be. And if we can start to wrap around services to those kids, then we're doing what we need to do to get them back on track to live the life that they want to live, you know, to figure out how they're going to meet their goals. And the intervention also addresses, how do you avoid violence? Many of these kids have been exposed to violence through family members as well. So they may not have a role model in their life that can help them understand that you can avoid violence. There are some strategies that you can use. So it's really just about connecting the youth with these strategies and with these resources to make sure they can get on the path to success. And we're using community health workers to do that. And that to me is an ideal person to be able to do that, because they're members of our community. They know what the resources are. They know the people that these youth need to connect with to get into those services. So that's what the grant is going to allow us to do. And we are going to be at three different schools. We're at Muskegon Heights, and Orchard View. And all of those services started this month.
Okay. So is the idea we can deal with this violence by I say it this way, as a pastor, I always tell people, church isn't about a bunch of things you don't do, or if you stop doing something, you got to replace it with something. So is the idea that there's some behaviors or activities that youth may be involved in that might lead to gun violence, we want to change those activities?
We want to give them strategies to address or to avoid the triggers.
Okay.
Essentially of violence. And it's more of a strengthening approach rather than a punitive approach, which I think makes it really strong.
Okay. I have one of our friends at the show calling in. Benita Threadgill says, what a tremendous collaborative effort. Looking forward to successful intervention outcomes. Thank you, Benita, for those comments. So Dr. Stork, you mentioned, again, some of your background. This program has been to other communities. What are some of the results we know from other communities where this program has taken place?
Yeah, thanks, Melvin. So the University of Michigan, actually for the past couple of decades, has been trying to understand youth violence, understand what's driving it, and develop evidence-based methods of addressing it. And the Safer Teens program, the word Safer Teens, when you see it written, the ER is capitalized, because this was a program they developed specifically for the emergency room in the Flint area. And the idea was to even go a little further upstream and to try to deal with alcohol use and drug use, interpersonal violence, dating violence. And the studies that were done, the evidence-based studies, all showed a significant decrease in those measures, if you will, during the one-year study that they undertook. And that study's been repeated a number of times and consistently shown a decrease in violent behavior. And the study's been done in person, or I'm sorry, the interventions have been done in person. They've been done by video. They've been done a number of different ways. And one of the reasons that we were so lucky to get involved is because once they had demonstrated this program would work, they really needed a community to roll it out, a fresh community to roll it out into. Mm-hmm. And we're all about community here. And they are a wonderful addition to our community. And so far, we've been able to roll this out into the Trinity Health ER, Health West.
Three Hackney Community Care.
Thank you. Thank you. And the Trinity Health Family Medicine Residency Clinic, and now three schools. Awesome. So they're happy because they get to study how these rollouts occur and all of the roadblocks that occur to implementing this program in a community. And we're happy because they've trained us how to do this, and we're able to roll this out really across the city, you know.
Awesome. So we have a program that we know has evidence of being successful and committed professionals. How does this interaction take place in the schools? That all students, well, you tell me, how is this interaction with these community work, social workers, how does that happen in the school system?
It's different for each school. So each school has the flexibility to say, this is how it's going to work best in our system. And mm-hmm. we're flexible enough to respond to that. So some schools would like all of their students to go through this screening process and then receive the interventions if they score positive. Some schools have identified students that they want to have priority in the intervention. They're basically saying these students we already know have at-risk behaviors, so the intervention is already needed and necessary for them. So that's what's nice about this is University of Michigan has given us some flexibility in how we deploy the program to make sure that it works for the setting that we're in.
Okay. So Dr. Gluck, when you mentioned the other facilities that where they've been trained in this. So is the idea that other than in school, you might encounter a healthcare professional who's been trained and might be able to make a referral or recognize these things the same way the community health workers would?
Yeah, you know, we started in the healthcare system because we thought that was going to be the most complex environment to roll this program out into. Mm-hmm. And what we discovered is that approximately 25% of young people who come into the Trinity Health ER for whatever reason will screen positive for being at risk for future violence. And so we weren't able to deliver the intervention to everyone in the emergency room. Mm-hmm. But just seeing those screening numbers, we realized that there was an even greater need in the community. Mm-hmm. And so we have tried to blanket the community with these different sites. And our friends at the University of Michigan tell us that some of the youth who are at risk have actually elected to undergo the intervention multiple times. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason is because it's not a lecture. It's a guided, as Holly alluded to, kind of a guided personal journey as to, hey, where are you at? where do you want to go, and how can, you know, violent behaviors interfere with you reaching your goals in the future? And what we're finding is that a lot of kids just want to be listened to. They don't want to be talked to. They don't want to be talked down to. They want to be listened to. And I think that's really one of the great things about the program.
Okay. DJ, let me ask you this again. You see young people at a different stage in this process. What are some of the commonalities you see, particularly with youth, when they're involved in gun violence?
You know, it is a lot of times it's that missing piece in their life, whether it's a father or whether it's a mother or another support other than what they are perceiving to receive in the streets. You know, kids are resilient in the idea that, you know, if I'm not getting what I perceive to be the love and support that I need, but I find it here in the streets, as false as that is, because as adults, we all know, especially, you know, in my career, it's never a positive outcome when young people look to the streets to find that missing support. That probably is the number one thing that we see in our young offenders, you know, and ultimately it's the inability to really have peaceful or positive conflict resolution. And that is that's a huge deal. Yeah. You know, somebody makes you angry, or for whatever reason, they live in a part of the town that you don't like for whatever reason, even though you can't articulate that reason, you're resorting to violence, typically gun violence, in order to resolve that conflict, as opposed to other methods that as adults, you know, we're used to, right? Communication, you know, working towards a compromise if necessary. Our kids are not getting those skills. And so that's another angle that we're seeing. And I think it was, I think Holly said this, it's not having that role model that is sort of guiding them when they have these issues, right? And, you know, a part of the metric and why the schools were so important. One, you have a captive audience of the age group that you're interested in. Mm-hmm. Two, we already, you know, are looking at least my office has already been very actively involved for several years on kids that are skipping school. And to me, that is a symptom to something else that's going on. Maybe it's a broken home. Maybe it's learning difficulties, whatever the case is, that's a symptom. And again, those are red flags that now this Safer Teens program is trying to and is capturing. And now what's great is we now have those supportive resources to provide these students with different direction. They don't have to go to the streets looking for that support. It's right in their very own backyard. And it's one of those things where you start planting those seeds. You start developing that and you fertilize it and you grow it. And, you know, I'm hoping to see the return here on investment in the next couple of years, mm-hmm. as these young people get older and continue to be successful in their lives and not resorting to making poor choices. And, you know, only time will tell. But, you know, to me, this is one of the more exciting programs that I've seen that has shown really positive results.
Awesome. Folks, we're on Community Focus today. We have Prosecutor DJ Hilson. We have Holly Alway, Intervention Coordinator at Trinity Health, and Dr. Brian Gluck. We're talking about Safer Teens program. Hopefully you're listening, and if you want to join in on the conversation, feel free to send us some comments on our Facebook page. We're going to take a brief break. We're at the bottom of the half hour. We'll come back with our guest today. Good afternoon again. Welcome back to Community Focus. Again, I'm Melvin Burns. I'm here solo today. If you're just joining us or have been with us on the program, so far we have been talking about gun violence and a new grant that has been awarded to our community from the Burns State Crisis Intervention Program. It's to deal with youth gun violence. It's their Safer Teen program that's just been rolled out. Our guest today, We have Holly Alway, the Injury Intervention Coordinator of Trinity Health. Dr. Brian Gluck, who's been instrumental in preparing and seeking out this grant opportunity, and our county prosecutor, DJ Hilson. Joe, join me in welcoming back to the program after our brief break. All right. Thank you all for hanging out for the whole hour with me here. I had a question, Holly. Program has been about a month since it's been rolled out. Two things. One, is there any initial pushback that you have to overcome? And I'm sure prior to awarding the grant, you talked with the schools, but any initial pushback that you get or issues you had to overcome in getting those workers into the schools?
I have to say the schools have been incredibly supportive and welcoming to us. And I think it's fair to say the schools have a lot on their plate. There's a lot of things that schools are responsible for, and that list seems to grow longer as the days go by. So I know that they feel a sense of relief to have an extra person in their school system to help provide some intervention to students that they know are potentially at risk. And just one more helping person to get them on the right track when possible. So far everything has been going smoothly. We have started at Muskegon and Orchard View, and at Muskegon Heights we start next week. I'm just really looking forward to getting through this initial startup phase and being able to start seeing some results.
Okay. Another question, the funding was $318,000. How long will that funding provide for the program?
So that will allow us to run the program through June 30th of 2026. So we'll have about a year and a half in the schools.
Awesome. Dr. Stork, I want to ask you the same question a little different way. When we talk about this program, you talked about other people in the health system being trained. Is there any kind of pushback when we talk about a program like this, or this is not what we should be doing as doctors, or any kind of pushback you have to overcome with healthcare workers in this sense?
Well, let me start, Melvin, by just following up with what Holly said. You know, we have an absolute rock star on our team named Lauren Meldrum. Okay. And Lauren Meldrum, I think a lot of people on your show probably know her. But she's really our ambassador or go-between with the schools. She's been working with the schools. One of the reasons I think things have gone so well is because we have her involvement. And if you had another hour to talk to us, I could list all the other people that are involved with this who aren't on the radio, who aren't on TV, but are, you know, people like Justin Dirks, you know, Laura Fitzpatrick. I could go on and on and on, and how people have just stepped up at the right moment to really not only keep this thing going, but to help it grow. Mm-hmm. To your question, yeah, there have been actually a lot of bumps along the way. And I think it has to do with a misunderstanding of violence and the drivers of violence. So even amongst some of my physician colleagues, when I talk to them about patients that come into the emergency room or have surgery, you know, they say, well, it's gang related. It's all gang related. There's nothing you can do about it. And I'd have to defer to DJ about whether it's all gang related or not, but I know it's not. So that's one misconception. And then another misconception is that there's nothing we can do about it, you know. We can't control the guns, so we can't stop the violence. And I think that's also proven and going to be proven not true. So some of it, as you just pointed out, is educating our peers, you know, not only in healthcare, but you know, I try to educate my patients about this when that opportunity arrives. And this show is a great opportunity to educate the community, because without the community support, you know, we don't have anything. So I appreciate you having us on the show.
Sure. DJ, let me sort of ask you the same question, you know, in a different way. In the time you've been prosecutor, I know you've done special programs for seniors who are exposed to violence. You do these kind of things. I know you're involved nationally with prosecutors. Do you ever get pushback in, hey, you know what? Let's just prosecute the bad guys. That's our job. Do you get that pushback, and how do you deal with it?
Yeah, that's a great question, Melvin, because there is this great conflict that some of my colleagues feel. And in some respects, I do, too, because, you know, certainly, you know, I part of our responsibility is to make sure that our community is safe.
Yes.
And part of that is, and part of that strategy, if you will, is sending those messages to individuals that really make really bad choices. And, you know, the way that that has been historically done is, well, you're going to go to prison for X amount of years. You're going to go to jail for X amount of months. And our hope is that people see that and go, you know, I don't want to be that person where I lose that part of my life for whatever period of time it is. And, mm-hmm. you know, historically that has been sort of, I'll say, the intervention strategy, right? The deterrent, mm-hmm. you're hoping that that will be the deterrent. And, you know, maybe for some people that is a deterrent, but if it were true for everybody, you know, we wouldn't be having this conversation today. Mm-hmm. So, you know, part of my growth and development as a prosecutor has been figuring out ways that we can, that I can personally and as an office, be more proactive in certain areas. And, you know, do some of my colleagues look at me like I'm crazy sometimes? Yeah. I mean, the old timers, the guys and gals that have been around for a few years and lived through, you know, the decades of being tough on crime, you know, certainly, you know, scratch their heads every once in a while saying, well, it almost appears as though you're trying to, you know, be coddle the behavior as opposed to stop it. And the truth of the matter is that I don't look at any of these as being soft on crime. It's actually being smart on crime. Mm. Because if I can plant a seed in a young person's head that going the path of a violent resolution to, you know, an everyday problem isn't the right way, and I don't have to do that by charging them and incarcerating them, I can do it in a positive, proactive way, I'm going to sign on for that. Because that's one less person that I have to worry about coming through the criminal justice system. That's one less person that has to, you know, carry that anchor around for the rest of their lives potentially. And so, you know, I look at this as an opportunity to try to wear two hats. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're still going to be tough when we have to be. And folks are still going to pay the price if they decide to make that bad choice. And I'm hoping that message gets to people and they understand that that's not the life that I want to live. But I also want to make sure that I'm part of something that provides hope and provides an opportunity where they don't even worry about making that decision because they know that it's not the, they know already that that's not the path that I want to go. And I didn't need to have my, you know, uncle, my aunt, my brother, my sister go through that system for me to figure out that that wasn't the path for me. But yeah, I mean, you know, you're always, you know, I was told a long time ago, you're never going to make everybody happy. Mm-hmm. And that's for me, that was hard to swallow at first, but I appreciate and understand that. For me, it always will be for me, if I'm doing the right thing, then that's all I need to know. And if folks aren't happy with that, then I can't control that. But I know that I'm doing the right thing.
Oh, good. Holly, let me ask you a question. And you use this term, and Dr. I think all of you probably use this term at some point, being proactive. You know, and, you know, part of the pejorative out there is, you know, hospitals want to, all they want to do is have people be there for patients and stay there for indiscriminate amounts of time and rack up those bills. Because we know that's not true. But talk about this idea of being proactive. Again, when I said earlier, that idea of gun violence and injury may not register with some people because they just think of the negative. But talk about this idea of being proactive in particular as a hospital and when we talk about gun violence.
So, I mean, that's exactly it. We struggle, I think, in society to be proactive about many things around mm-hmm. our health. You know, mm-hmm. people don't see the doctor as often as they should. They let things slide for a while. They don't do their preventive screenings. Like, there's a whole list of things where it's easier for us to react when something goes bad than it is to respond before it gets bad. And prevention is all about, like, let's intervene before it becomes an issue, before there are any impacts. And quite frankly, it's cheaper to intervene before an issue arises than it is to treat the issue. And we see that with gun violence as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, while it may be just one person who was shot, the impact ripples throughout the community. There were neighbors who saw it. There are family members who are dealing with it. There is, you know, there's a community that is impacted by it. And so for us to be able to go in and do prevention work to screen and to support and provide services to help prevent future issues is important. It's just as important as my work in providing car seats to family or bike helmets to kids. This is just another step of that effort to make sure that at the end of the day, I'm doing what I can to keep people out of the hospital. And it's been great being supported by Dr. Stork and by DJ, because it really truly is a community effort. It can't be done by just one agency.
And you say that, and I want to understate that, Holly, when you know, you have these ideas for these programs, but to get support from Dr. Stork like you get, it adds impetus to what you're trying to do. You're not just somebody out there with these pie-in-the-sky ideas.
Absolutely. And quite frankly, you know, we talked about it earlier, but it was Dr. Stork's work and passion around that issue that really kind of kicked the hospital into gear in recognizing it. I think gun violence is one of those issues where it's a lot easier to ignore it or become desensitized to it. But that's not fair to the community. We owe the community more. And we absolutely need to be doing our level best to make sure that we're preventing that kind of violence in our community. And so having people like Dr. Stork who can elevate that issue and DJ who is, whose office is willing to be the fiduciary and support the work that we're doing here is just it's critical to getting the job done.
Okay. I want to ask you each a question. We have funding through June 26. If we do a follow-up call with you all in July of 26, one, we hope we have more funding, but we won't have all the data. But when I talk with you, 15, 16 months from now, what do you want to tell me? What do you expect the outcomes to be? What do you want to be able to say about the program after, 15, 16 months? I'll start with you, Dr. Stork.
Yeah, we're currently putting together the metrics that we want to study with this program. And I think it's really important to share with the community and with parents that we're not collecting data on individual students. That's not our goal here. Okay. Our goal is to collect data on how it impacts schools and how it impacts our community. So we're going to be looking at truancy rates. We're going to be looking at disciplinary referrals to the principal's office. Those types of, broader kind of metrics, if you will, to judge whether this program is successful in our community or not. I will again follow Holly one more time and say, Dr. Madsen, myself and a couple other people did this study years ago that actually showed the hospitals lose money on the care of gun violence victims. So it's in the hospital's best interest to really do this. And that research that we did would have gone nowhere without Holly. Holly actually brought it to the Muskegon Social Justice Commission. She brought it to DJ. And so I just want to emphasize again that this is a community project and that everybody's just so critical on the team that we have. And the parents at these schools are going to be really, really important team members as we go forward as well. And we want to make sure that they're educated about what we're doing and what we're not doing. I hope I answered your question, Mel.
No, you did. How about you, DJ?
Well, I mean, to sort of expand on what Dr. Stork just said, I'm hoping that because of these intervention strategies, we're going to see a decrease in disciplinary action at school, which in my mind will have a ripple effect on kids going to school, being in the classroom, graduation rates, I would anticipate increasing. And ultimately that we see less and less of our young people, those school age people committing violent crime. And to me, that is sort of the generational divide I want to create, is that I want to cut through that generational divide so that this current generation of young folks, school age folks, are not falling into those situations where they're making really bad choices. And so if that is a ripple effect, which I'm anticipating it will be, this community will be far better than it ever has been. And again, that's the ultimate goal, is to improve the quality of life for everybody, no matter where you live.
Okay. And Holly, how about you? The same question.
So I agree with everything that Dr. Stork and DJ have just said. You know, I think there are some common metrics that we're expecting to see: decreased violence, increased school attendance and engagement. But for me, true success here is really going to be this. I would define it almost as a cultural shift in which youth are empowered to make good or better decisions, to resist peer pressure, to resist social media influences that are negative, and really just make good decisions that set them up for a better life. And if we can get that culture shift so that's the norm, I think that's a huge transition for the community in terms of decreasing violence, because we're starting to change how generations experience young adulthood. And on top of that, I would love to see other communities replicate what we're doing here, because what it is so successful.
Awesome. I like to think I'm the world's best question asker, but I'm not always. Is there anything that I didn't ask you guys that you want to make sure we say about the program? Again, I'm excited to hear it's being rolled out in the high schools. You know, I'm a father of a 25-year-old. And so in her lifetime of high school, you know, she's had friends deal with gun violence and the tears and having to go to funerals of young friends. So, as a parent, it's, you know, one of those things I didn't know I was going to deal with when I had her 25 years ago. And so I'm so excited and pleased to see that the proactive approach you all are taking. But is there anything that I didn't get to ask you all that want to make sure we get out there as we inform the public?
I just want to emphasize two things here, Melvin. I think what's really critically important to the success of this, both from a program standpoint and a community standpoint, is I believe it was Dr. Stork said, parents. Mm-hmm. You know, we're asking and really begging the parents to support these efforts and to not to really support it, because ultimately it is for the safety. Even if your child maybe isn't screened positive for this, be supportive, because in the end, you know, your child's going to benefit by not having to live through the trauma of a gun violence event. And that's really what we're hoping for. The other thing too, and I really don't want to underemphasize this, you know, Muskegon County residents need to really appreciate how blessed we are to have a health system like Trinity Health. I'm like a pretty face on a brochure for this program. The real hard work and the heavy lifting has all been done by Holly and her staff, Dr. Stork and his relationships. They're the driving force behind this. I'm happy to, you know, sit in the passenger seat on this and lend whatever help I can. But I think folks really need to appreciate how deeply committed Trinity Health is. And this goes all the way to the top, to making our community a safe place. It's awesome. I mean, you know, never in my life did I think as a prosecutor that I'd be partnering with our health system on a proactive gun violence. I mean, that never crossed my mind. And literally it took a doctor who wasn't going to take no for an answer. And I love that. I mean, I go to battle with Dr. Stork anytime he wants. I just really want our community to really understand how valuable that asset is. And it's not just because they treat you when you're sick. They're actually heavily involved in making our community a better place.
Awesome. We have a few minutes left as we wrap up. I want to push out the soapbox for a minute here. Dr. Stork, I'm going to start with you. Just speak to our community about this issue of gun violence in general, and let them hear you and even your, again, your passion for wanting to address this issue in our community.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Melvin, you know, as I mentioned before, I'm from Iowa, so I came here and I started seeing this. It's heartbreaking. You know, back in 2015, 2017, it seemed like it was on a weekly basis. Young people, you know, as a urologist, I take care of guys in their 60s, 70s. You know, they have trouble urinating. Maybe their erections don't work, that kind of thing. But to see something like that, to see young people have the rest of their lives changed or lose their lives, it was like something I'd never seen before. It was, yeah, it's traumatizing to see. And it's not just me. It affects the healthcare system. When victims come in, it affects families and communities. It's a big deal. I will say, I want to be really transparent about this Safer Teens program. You know, I know a lot of parents. I live down towards the Grand Haven area. You know, whenever something happens at school, they get really nervous. Like, what's this all about? This is going to be bad. You know, I feel like nobody's telling me anything. We want to be super transparent with this. If your child is invited to do this, ask them what it was about. You know, ask them about the experience. That only amplifies what we're trying to do here, having a discussion at home about these things. So I'm rambling, Melvin. I hope I answered your question.
No, you did. You did. If I, and I want you to know, as the program's going on, we've been getting likes and thumbs ups on the program. So people are appreciating what they're hearing. Holly, I'm going to leave the soapbox out for you. Any final comments or any appeals you want to make to our community?
Yeah, so I think the other piece here is, you know, in addition to talking about Safer Teens, the hospital is also involved in other efforts to address gun violence. We realize that one solution is not going to fix gun violence in our community. So there are other efforts that we're working on, especially around safe storage. So those programs exist. So there may not be opportunities for community members to get involved with Safer Teens just because of the structure of the program. But if you are interested in being part of the solution to gun violence, I invite you to connect with me. There are multiple opportunities for community members to get involved with these efforts.
Okay. DJ, I'm going to let you have the final word today.
Well, look, I've said this many times. You know, it takes a community to battle an issue. And this community, people may not believe it, but it's absolutely true. This community is stronger than the problem. Mm-hmm. And if we unite as a community, and it's a, and we can even scale it down as a neighborhood, as a block, as a string of houses, if folks unite, they are going to be stronger than the problem. And I've said this many, many times. When that happens, you will always have a prosecutor and a prosecutor's office standing right next to you every step of the way. You know, Dr. Stork sees it probably more than I do, but it's heart. My heart just aches every time that I have to sit across the table in my office from another grieving family who's lost a loved one due to gun violence. That is just, it's heart-wrenching. And the criminal justice system certainly is part of it, but is not the ultimate solution. It just isn't. It's not going to bring anybody back. It may provide a little bit of solace, but it's not the total comfort that people are looking for. Stuff like this, being proactive, being strong in the neighborhood, that's the kind of thing that leads to long-lasting and positive results. And this community has it in them to do it. And I just keep asking people, stand up, be strong, and you'll have strong partners standing next to you.
Awesome. Prosecutor DJ Hilson, Dr. Brian Stork of Trinity Health and U of M Medicine, Holly Allway, intervention. I probably butchered your title so many times today. Don't hold it against me. I can't tell how many times I wrote it down also. I'm going to say it right. Injury prevention. Injury intervention coordinator.
Gold star. You got it.
Okay. Thank you all so much for joining us. More importantly, thank you all for having a heart and a concern for our community. We appreciate you all being with us so much today. You know what today is? Today is Pi Day. So we always have a closing thought. You know what? Go get your big piece of pie, folks, if you're listening. Go share it with somebody. It's a good time. People don't fight when they have a piece of pie together. So find somebody, get a big piece of pie. I like apple with, you know, a la mode. Share a piece of pie with somebody on Pi Day. Make peace. Be kind to somebody. Have an awesome weekend. Thank you all for joining us on the program. This has been Community Focus. Get better, Brother Gregory T. I miss you, brother. Thank you all so much.